Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Welcome to the program. Dan Andros is going to be here in a minute to talk about America's military and racists at Cinnabon. We're going to start, though, by doing Ilhan Omar, spokeswoman of fraud. She apparently has a new job. She's in Congress, sure. She is the eye candy in Maroon 5 videos, sure. But what else is she? Apparently the spokeswoman of fraud. And this is a fascinating story that goes to the Minneapolis, and we've done a lot of coverage on this. Hopefully you're not sick of the story yet because I'm fascinated by it. We're talking about like $1 billion of fraud or more. There's some estimates that are much higher than that, largely from the Somali community in Minnesota, who were, you know, taking money from COVID schemes and taking money from autism payments. They were supposed to go to kids with autism. Those kids didn't have autism or didn't exist at all. Food payments, housing payments for people that were basically made up. It's a shocking scandal. And you think in a situation like that, where there's a lot of evidence, a lot of accepted fraud going on, you wouldn't be able to hire a congresswoman to be your spokesperson. But apparently, for free, she's absolutely excited to go out there and defend the community that did all this. Now, of course, it is important to note, as we always do, that this does not mean every person in this community was involved in this. It's not, and there's no evidence to that whatsoever. There is evidence to a lot of people being involved in it, far too many. And that is a big debate now going on between the right and the insane, like Ilhan Omar. The Somali welfare scandal is even worse than you think, is the updated headline over at Daily Wire. And here is Stephen Miller talking about this a little bit this weekend. Now, there's no person, perhaps even including Donald Trump, that the media hates more than Stephen Miller. They despise this guy. Here he is talking about the fraud operation and what was encompassed there.
Based on what we have found so far, we believe that the Somali fraud operation in Minnesota is the single greatest theft of taxpayer dollars through welfare fraud in American history. We believe that we have only scratched the very top of the surface of how deep this goes. And you're familiar with all the scams with pretending that children have autism who are not in fact autistic, with pretending to enroll people in food programs when in fact nobody was ever enrolled, and engaging in massive fraud, lying and theft and grift on a scale we've never seen before in American history. The total bill, the total tab for this is going to be far beyond the numbers we've already seen reported. We believe the state government is fully complicit in this scheme. And we believe that what we are going to uncover is going to shock the American people. Look, based on the records that we already have, this is a significant undercount, by the way. 75% of the Somali population in Minnesota is on welfare. But that's likely a significant undercount of just how much of a financial burden the Somali refugee population is imposing
country. It's a pretty serious accusation. And, you know, when you're talking about scale, there's been a lot of fraud in this country. Is it possible it's that big? Well, I think it is. That's at least the evidence we have so far. And it might even be bigger than we expect. Face the Nation had Ilhan Omar on to answer these questions from the claim from Stephen Miller. And here's where she went.
I want to ask you about something else that the architect of the president's immigration policy, Stephen Miller, said. On Thanksgiving Day, he posted, "No magic transformation occurs when failed states cross borders. At scale, migrants and their descendants recreate the conditions and terrors of their broken homelands." What do you make of this argument of failure to assimilate and sort of ruining America? How do you understand this?
I mean, when I think about Stephen Miller and his white supremacist rhetoric, it reminds me of the way the Nazis described Jewish people in Germany. Sure. And, you know, as we know, there have been many immigrants who've tried to come to the United States who've turned back, one of them being Jewish immigrants migrants. We know the way that people were described who were coming from Ireland, Irish immigrants. We know the way in which people were described back then when they were Italian immigrants. And to me, you know, we're yes, of course, ethnically Somali. We are in this country as Americans.
Yeah.
We are citizens. We are productive, part of this nation, and we will continue to be.
Now, you might expect that you wouldn't get the best analysis of, or from someone appearing in Maroon 5 videos. That might be the type of thing that you'd say, hey, I'm not really expecting better than that, but let me pick it apart anyway. At least, first of all, I should point out, she does a lot of comparisons to Nazis. And then when you hear her talk about Jews, she sounds an awful like them. I just find that to be fascinating. Like, the people on the left who hate Jews are constantly using Nazis as a bad example of things, when it seems like a lot of the rhetoric, like pro-Hamas rhetoric, sounds almost identical to what the Nazis were saying. I don't know why they're so upset with the Nazis, at least from their perspective. That's a fascinating argument. And, you know, look, we know that this is not all a situation where, you know, every Somali immigrant is bad, every refugee is bad. I mean, I think you can make, and this was a point, what was the wording Miller used there? It was at scale. When you have people crossing borders at scale, he's not saying that every immigrant who comes here is bad. What he's saying is when you have a scale where 75% of a community is at some level taking government dollars, that might not be the best approach when you're talking about bringing refugees in. Now, some of them do really need help and they need help resettling. But the goal for those people, the ones that we do take in, should be to melt into the society, to be a part of it, to say, gosh, this country is awesome compared to the place I used to be. What you're getting out of people like Ilhan Omar is this country is horrible. It's crap. The people I care about are in Somalia. That formula does not work. That's a totally different formula. Now, Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary, was on CBS's Face the Nation talking about this fraud as well. And he made a minor request, and I think it's pretty reasonable, but you tell me.
These are money, the Bureau services, and they are wire transfer organizations that are outside the regulated banking system. And that money has gone overseas, and we are tracking that both to the Middle East and to Somalia to see what the uses of that have been.
Okay, but you have no evidence of that money being used to fuel terrorism is what some conservative writers are alleging.
That's why it's an investigation. We started it last week. We'll see where it goes. But I can tell you that, you know, it's terrible. You know, the Representative Omar tried to downplay it, said, it was very tough to know how this money should be used.
Yeah.
You know, she was gaslighting the American people.
Well, we'll talk to her.
Yeah. But, you know, when you come to this country, you got to learn which side of the road to drive on. You got to learn to stop the stop signs, and you got to learn not to defraud the American people.
You know, I mean, do you, though? You know, do you really need to drive on the right side of the road? Do you really need to stop at stop signs? Do you really need to learn not to defraud the American people? That seems like a really excessive request. We shouldn't be asking that much. Of course we should. That should be something very, very basic. And you might say, okay, well, you've got the accusation there that this stuff is happening in this way. And then you have the legally appointed defender of this community and the fraud going on in it, Ilhan Omar. She's here to talk about it. Again, this is, CBS Face the Nation, apparently as obsessed with the story as I am. Here she is on CBS Face the Nation talking about it.
House Republicans and the Treasury Secretary just now talked about a link to terrorism, a possible link. He said they're just now beginning to look into it. How confident are you that that's a false claim?
I'm pretty confident at the moment because there are people who have been prosecuted and who have been sentenced. If there was a linkage in that the money that they had stolen going to terrorism, then that is a failure of the FBI and our court system in not figuring that out and basically charging them with these charges.
Right.
And so I do know that for many years, this sort of like alarm that there is money being transferred through the airport in bags and going to terrorism has all that accusation has always existed. There's never been here and there in those accusations.
Okay, yeah, great point. So basically, the problem here is not the people sending money to terrorists or defrauding the government. It's the FBI for not figuring it all out on time. That's the, gosh, it's just amazing. It really is. The FBI's skirt was too short. It's their fault for all the things that happened to them because of that. It is a, you can hear the hedging in her voice, right? She's very much not wanting to say what this is. And of course, it has nothing to do with bags of cash going through airports. They have scanners at airports. Who puts bags of cash through an airport? Nobody does that. And I don't know anyone who's accusing them of that. Maybe that's out there on the internet somewhere, but it's not what I've heard. What I heard is you send these remittances to your home country. And, you might say in a country like Somalia that has barely any functioning government at all and is many sections of it are run by people like Al-Shabaab. You're talking about branches of Al-Qaeda and ISIS that are running sections of these communities. They don't really care what the law is. They don't really care about any of that. They're going to take their chunk. They're taking their cut. That might not even be the intent of some of the people in Somalia. So why would they be charged? But the fact is that this money going there is a massive problem if they're the ones taking advantage of it. Now, Chris Rufo, when they say some conservative writers, mainly referring to Chris Rufo, of course, who has a show here on The Blaze. He wrote that up in City Journal and had some accusations along those lines. He's uncovering new evidence that did not seem to be available to the FBI as of relatively recently. We'll see how that plays out. Of course, there's different standards, right? When you have an article that you're writing, you're trying to get to the truth. You're asking around. You're asking experts. And Chris wrote all the information that he had in the story along with a co-writer. When you're talking about a legal accusation, it's a different standard, right? Like you have to get the actual every piece of evidence and have it all right there. And it has to clear many legal standards might not have been available to the FBI at that time. It's good that they are looking into it because we've seen what's happened when this stuff gets the shoulder shrug. And people like Tim Wall say, well, I don't want to be seen like I'm a racist, so I won't even look into this stuff. It costs people in Minnesota, the taxpayers there, over $1 billion, several billion by some estimates now. And I think those numbers are going to continue to grow. So it's pathetic, but there's a lot in our country that is pathetic right now. I'll go through some of that with Dan Andrews, who joins me next. Let me tell you about our sponsor, Raycon. If you're looking for a holiday gift, I've been using Raycon's Essential Open Earbuds recently. I just got them. I've only had them for like a month, but they're really great. They're regular earbuds, they can block out everything. Either, even if you don't have the sound canceling out or on, sometimes you just feel like you're locked in your own little world. Someone can be calling your name, a car can honk, and you don't even really notice it. Raycon developed these open ear design, and I had never used anything like these before. They sit on your ear, but like outside your ear canal. They're not like jammed in your ear, which at times like even can give me like headaches and stuff when I have those. You get clear, immersive sound, great for podcast listening. If you're a person who likes to go on walks for podcasts, when I go on a walk, I'm listening usually to a podcast or something. You could still hear, if someone's coming by you, someone's calling your name, something's going on, you're still aware of your surroundings. They're very light. They have a multi-angular hook that kind of rotates to give you secure and a personalized fit. They don't fall out of your off your ear. And you can get comfortable with these things. They're like, half the price of other brands trying to do this. Partially is because they're not paying for celebrity endorsements. They're doing advertisements on shows like this that have no celebrities whatsoever. They're just like, I don't know, just give me some guy. I will tell you, though, I would talk about Raycon and do talk about Raycon when they're not advertising because I really love these. They're totally different than the other headphones you have, and they're great for different uses, like maybe, for the outside walk as opposed to an airplane. They've got solutions for all of that. So 36 hours of battery life between the buds and the case. means days of listening without hunting for a charger. The Essential Open Earbuds are here for the holiday season. They're selling fast. You're going to love these things. Raycon audio products are up to 20% off this holiday season. So go to buyraycon.com/stewopen. Buyraycon.com/stewopen. Save on the Raycon audio products site-wide. Order by December 15th. Guaranteed delivery by Christmas. Because great gifts shouldn't show up late, of course. One more time, the place to go is buyraycon.com. buyraycon.com/stewopen.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam. Und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem. Mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Joined now by Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can get wherever you get your podcast. And of course, you should do so. Daniel, thanks for coming back on the program.
All right. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk to you about a couple of things. I know over at CBN, you spend a lot of time covering what's going on in Israel. And certainly over the war, you guys have done great coverage. There's a shocking development that has come out, though, and I don't know if that you've hit this yet or not, because I was stunned by it. But apparently, and this is according to The New York Times, apparently since Israel stopped trying to wipe out Hamas in Gaza, and there's the ceasefire arrangement, apparently, this is going to stun you, Hamas is getting stronger and gaining control of Gaza all over again. I mean, will the wonders ever cease?
So, yeah, what you're saying is what Hamas didn't do in Gaza was just say, you know what, I guess we've lost here. Why don't we go start some businesses here? Why don't we take this aid that we get all the time and instead of making missile silos and makeshift rocket launchers and things of that nature, we'll actually build water pipelines and not dig tunnels and things like that? Is that what you're saying? They didn't actually do that?
Yeah, I was as stunned as you were. I mean, I couldn't believe it. It just seems like they'd immediately just hunker down into entrepreneurship, but apparently not.
No, it's almost like they're terrorists and their stated goal is to eliminate Israel off the face of the map. I mean, this is why Israel is Israel has shown great patience over the past several decades here in dealing with this. We've seen this type of thing with ceasefires and always after, by the way, Hamas fires a bunch of rockets into Israel, 2008, 2012, 2014. And every single time they didn't stop and say, you know what, we're going to play nice. They try to regroup because that's what their goal is. And that's what Israel's been saying. They're like, how can we continue to let these people fester when this is what they're going to do? It's a proven fact.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because like I'm supportive of the effort to try to stop this violence, obviously. Like I think what Trump did in the Middle East and the people around him, generally speaking, really good intentions. And, you know, you have a hopeful outcome for something like that. But that being said, like, we can all recognize that, you know, part of this agreement was that Hamas would be out of power. Part of this agreement that was that Hamas and the people who were in Hamas would have to leave the area, that they could no longer govern the area, that they could not bring up any military options. They could not develop those over time. All these things were part of the deal that outside countries, other Arab countries would come in and help oversee this area. To my knowledge, really none of that stuff has happened. And it seems like Hamas is just going back to doing what it's always done, which strikes me to, you know, kind of believe that this ceasefire is not going to last forever. We're going to have a situation relatively soon where Israel says enough and they start this over again.
Right. And this is sort of the dirty little secret about the Middle East over there is that no one wants Hamas in their country either. These neighboring countries, right? They don't want to have to deal with them. So they're perfectly fine when these ceasefires come along because they're like, okay, great. They're going to stay there. If they get annihilated and chased out of there, guess what? They land somewhere else and those countries don't want to deal with them. So as much as they'll publicly complain about Israel, they really don't want to deal with a bunch of terrorists running around that are just crazy causing chaos as much as they already have. They don't want more of it. And so they're perfectly content with them in Gaza, and these ceasefires enable them to keep doing that.
Yeah, let them bug Israel so they're not bugging us.
Yeah, exactly.
This is part of the really large profile and portfolio, I guess, of challenges that President Trump has when you're talking about overseas relations. And, you know, his approach has been like, hey, let's try to like solve these conflicts and move on with them. Part of that, I think part of the secret to that is a lasting peace would be something where we do have better relations with a lot of these Arab countries that can kind of get on the side of sanity rather than opposing it as they have over the past decades. And another part of this is what's going on with China, right? China's military is growing. It's growing leaps and bounds. Their technology is improving. And there's a new piece in the New York Times, which is comical to me in some ways, but it's called Overmatched: Why the U.S. Military Needs to Reinvent Itself. And the thesis behind it is basically China is doing all these things that are going to work in a war that could develop with the United States or some other major power. The United States is buying really expensive weapons that I would put in parentheses, we keep giving to Ukraine. But, you know, generally speaking, is approaching this the wrong way. Now, I don't remember seeing any of this during the Biden administration. Now, apparently, this is the New York Times opinion. But it is a scary one, and I think there are real risks with the way that we're doing things right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting to think that this is when they come out with this now, after I do recall President Biden leaving like half of our military vehicles in Afghanistan, right? Like just yeah. Like, oops, we just, forget it. Mm-hmm. It's just a little too much effort to bring it back. Let's just leave them there. No big deal there. And then it's Republicans pounce when we dare bring it up. But now they bring this up. But aside from media hypocrisy aside, it is a conversation that is actually worth looking at. Where is China in relation to us? And, you know, it's tough to know what to believe, how much of this is bluster by China. I mean, listen, I did see China. They just had a bridge just completely collapse out of nowhere the other day. This was I just happened to see it on my feed, this video. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, they seem impressive on some stuff. I don't want to blow it off, but is it really real? I don't know. And I think another thing to talk about, Stu, is what is the actual biggest threat? Like, are we ever going to see a boots on the ground war again in the future, is like with these sorts of things? Or is it going to be more kind of cyber war, or the sorts of things that, you know, sabotage, those sorts of things seem like they're going to be more of the common fronts, battle fronts on the future wars.
Yeah. And one of the things they talk about in the piece, which, you know, again, it's the New York Times, it has some issues and I would complain about it, but it does make some good points. Like for the idea that China is really developing cheap drone technology at immense scale, right? And like, you know, I think I'm with you. Basically, I'm not like all that scared about a ground war with troops going in. I mean, you never know. It could happen with China. But that would, A, be very difficult to win, considering how many people they have. And also the fact that they don't mind throwing millions of them at any problem and don't mind if they're all in the ground a few minutes later. So you got that going on. But like the approaches there, where they're developing cyber warfare, they are developing AI, they are developing, massive drones at like, you know, ridiculous scale. I don't think we're doing that. And we seem to be getting rid of a lot of our weapons to allies, adversaries. Everybody seems to be getting a hold of our weapons. It just seems like an approach that is not, you know, it long predates Trump. I mean, that's the most frustrating thing. You mentioned the hypocrisy. It long predates him. But it is really scary when you start thinking about it. I mean, are we really going to defend Taiwan in a war if they attack it? I think we're just going to be like, right. Oops, we didn't. Tai who? I don't know who Tai is. I think it could get ugly quickly. Yeah, our bad.
Yeah. We'll get there next time.
Yeah. It does seem to be the way we're going here. Let me hit a couple other things as far as foreign affairs before we move on to something else, maybe a little bit more fun. China's trade surplus is now climbing. It's now past $1 trillion for the first time. And what's fascinating about this, of course, is, you know, this is one of Donald Trump's central ideas, is to, you know, use tariffs and to try to get that trade balance in his mind, more to a level that's appropriate. Now, you know, look, there's a lot of disagreement on this. A lot of economists don't think this is an important number to focus on. And I'm kind of on that side. But, you know, the fact that like these tariffs are now, we're going to have a trade deficit with China that's 20% larger than it was in the last year of Joe Biden. And when you think about that, like, what are we getting out of all of these tariffs? Is there anything coming from this?
I mean, you would hope. I mean, I have seen the latest thing posited was that, you know, this is all a bigger play in Trump getting rid of the income tax. Now, if that were to happen, you know, hey, wonderful news. I would love to have the income tax wiped out. I just don't see how that's even remotely plausible because with the tariffs, you know, Trump, and this is even debatable if it's legally available to him, and we'll see if these get upheld eventually if they keep going to court, that he can just basically say, well, we're going to do this tariff and we're going to do this tariff and we're going to make it this percent. Ah, just kidding. We're going to pause it. And then, well, we're going to raise it double. No, we'll go lower. Like, that's how Trump likes to operate because he's used to being a businessman. But when you talk about getting rid of the income tax, like, that's something that is just going to, you can't just wave the magic wand at the presidential executive order wand at that thing. So don't know that it'll ever happen. But if that's the thing that we're holding out hope for, then, I mean, don't hold your breath because it's probably not coming. And remember, Trump, what he did was he promised the golden age of America. If you look back at all the marketing from when the first 90 days, and it's the golden age of America. And he complained about the food prices and all the prices under Biden, which were bad. But I mean, they haven't gotten a ton better right now. And, you know, people have had patience with the tariffs, him saying, like, listen, this is what we're going to do. We've been getting screwed and it's going to work out. And it's like, people have short attention spans these days, especially when it comes to their pocketbooks. And if they don't feel any relief coming anytime soon, this is going to be a debate that heats up, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the elections right around the corner, this stuff has to, we have to show some progress here in the next few months.
Right. That's going to be midterms. Yeah. It's going to be a bloodbath
right there. A couple of things on this. I think first of all, this happens a lot in the world of punditry, of course, where, you know, President Trump will say something. And, you know, we'll have a big debate. I was like, well, would you have a switch of income tax for tariffs? And like, I, as you know, Dan, I'm like the least favorable person on tariffs in America, or at least up there. But, you know, if we got rid of the income tax, I mean, my eyes are like, if you could do that, sure.
All right, the problem is my interest. Yeah.
Yeah. As you point out, it's almost impossible to do. We barely got a holding the rates where they were through Congress. And, you know, if you look at Kalshi and Polymarket, they have markets on this in the prediction markets. And what they say is, even by 2027, is there any chance that we would get rid of the income tax on people earning just less than $150,000, which is what President Trump was talking about when you look at the details? And it's at like 1 or 2%. Like, you know, in reality, we'll have all these conversations, but in reality, unlike pardons, unlike tariffs, until the courts, I believe, would get that right, he has the power to kind of do those things. He doesn't have the power to push this stuff through, which makes it impossible. I mean, you know, getting this through Congress is going to be really difficult.
You know, the really interesting thing about that number on Polymarket Kalshi being so low is that it's not even like the complete abolition of the income tax.
Yeah.
Like, that's the easier hurdle, getting it on $150,000 and lower, right? Yes. Like, that's the thing. Oh, the Democrats have been saying the rich people, like, if we just keep taxing them, we'll be great. We'll be solved. You've obviously done the numbers on that. And that, even that, like, you can't just keep taxing the rich. It doesn't work.
Nope.
But that, according to their logic, they would be okay with, you know, all the little people getting the free ride on the taxes. Like, so in theory, that's even the easier hurdle to cross. And the numbers are still terribly low on it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dan, I want to take a break. I want to come back on the other side. I want to talk to you about Cinnabon, which is very, very exciting. Because I freaking love Cinnabon. It's the greatest thing in the world. But this might be the worst experience you ever have thinking about Cinnabon. We'll have this story for you next. Most of the clothes we buy today feel like they're designed to last just long enough for us to forget where we bought them. And, you know, the fabric gets thinner. The seams start to warp, and soon you're kind of paying good money for something that's already on its way to the donation pile. American Giant is the exact opposite of this experience, and what a great gift this is going to be for the holidays. Because if you get someone for Christmas, you get them a Christmas present, and they're like, oh, hey, thanks for the hoodie. And then by next year, it's already shredded and it's gone. With American Giant, you're going to hang around for a while, right? Like, your present's going to be remembered for a very long time, because every piece that they make starts with the idea that clothing should feel dependable and make with enough care that you notice the difference the moment you put it on. They have hoodies and tees and everyday staples that are built here right in the United States. And like, this predates all the stuff we talk about, you know, there's all these concerns about factories being, you know, in the United States or outside of it, and the tariffs and all the stuff that goes on. They were like, American Giant's like, we're just going to do this anyway because we believe in it. It's got nothing to do with government policy. We're going to do what we believe. You feel it in the weight of the cotton. You feel it in the strength of the stitching, the way everything keeps its structure, not just for a few washes, but for years and years ahead. Nothing about American Giant is rushed or disposable. It's intentional from the first cut of fabric to the last quality check before it ships out the door to your house and maybe under your tree. Buy American today. American-Giant.com. American-Giant.com. Save 20% when you use my name, Stu, at checkout. It's American-Giant.com. The promo code is Stu. Go there now. American-Giant.com.
Achtung, es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knete ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Libara ist ja irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 GB für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd. Libara, deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter libara.de.
I am racist.
Mm-hmm.
And you are an
idiot. You are an idiot. No,
I am
not.
Racist, and I'll say that to the whole entire world. Don't be disrespectful.
You ruined your life, by the way.
Oh, you talk about respect? You talk about respect? You are fired from this place, mother. You're not gonna be working here.
Suck it.
Suck what? Look how you
it.
Look
like.
What's wrong with you?
What the is wrong with you, you ugly. Get the out of
ugly? Talking about ugliness?
Did I stand stutter?
You.
Suboptimal, Dan. Not the best moment anyone has ever had in a Cinnabon, that I will say. This is a woman named Crystal, and she was talking to, it's unclear exactly, I think maybe a couple of Somalis is one of the videos said in the context, but that is her saying the stuff that was bleeped out, the N-word multiple times. I always appreciate a woman saying suck it. I don't know why it makes me laugh every single time. But they're like, suck what? So it's a good question. But anyway, that's off the
topic. She's trans.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe she was. That's a great point. This is a woman who says this to some customers to the store. We don't know what led up to this. There could have been, they could have said something horrible to her too, but you know, never an excuse to lose control of yourself.
Sure, they didn't just order a Cinnabon? Just said, hey, just get me a
How dare you order
here.
A mini bun instead of a Cinnabon?
It had to be nothing. It just had to be the wrong order.
Yeah. So all that goes down. And what I'm kind of interested in here, more than anything else, is the reaction of some online who are basically saying it's wrong that she was fired from this job, which obviously she was immediately. It's wrong because that's basically cancel culture in action. Is this cancel culture, Dan?
There's cancel culture, and then there's play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, and what happened here is the latter. Mm. Like, you are, let's just think about your job here. You are making delicious cinnamon rolls that smell yummy. And I thank Cinnabon for having one, I think in Penn Station there for all those years,
oh, yeah.
Which made it smell a little better for a few seconds as I walked by there. It smelled like cinnamon rolls instead of all the other stuff you smell mm-hmm. at Penn Station. And it's like, this is your job. Your job is to give someone a little taste of Cinnabon happiness, you know, cinnamon roll goodness and deliciousness, and with a smile on your face. I don't know what could have possibly happened to get to the point where, even if the customer's horrible, right? Isn't it that the customer's always right? They might be jerks. They might be saying rude things. They might be in a hurry. They might complain. Just smile. You're getting paid. Just give them the cinnamon and let them go. Like, you cannot do this. This is the what you got one job. Just the one. Make the cinnamon rolls and hand them out without yelling racist slurs at people. How can they possibly? I saw the give, send, go. They're like,
oh,
how
yeah.
come Cinnabon didn't defend her? Like, how do you defend this?
Can you imagine?
Even Cinnabon,
we stand behind Crystal and her overt racism that she admits right. on camera.
Right.
And her use of the N word.
Like, even if the other people said something horrible, like, you white cracker,
right, right.
piece of trash, like, that doesn't then give you the green light
no.
to retaliate. I mean, remember the girl working at Chick-fil-A when the guy came in calling her a hater and all this stuff, and she just smiled. Like, that's the reaction.
That's how you win.
That's how you win.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Although, perhaps we should revise this analysis because, as you mentioned, there is a give, send, go. We have it right here. She's raised over $100,000, which I am terrified by. Like, who's going to donate to the... Again, I am totally, like, you know, she should be able to say these things. Saying that, you know, even though they're terrible, and I disagree with all of them, she should be able to say these things on her own private time. She should not be, she's a representative of a company. In the same way right. that if I went into, you know, a Sbarro and they were like, by the way, I can't stand those Jews, I would say that person should lose their job. If right. I went into a Panera Bread and the person behind the counter was like, hey, sure glad Charlie Kirk got shot, I would want them to be, not because I love cancel culture, because they're representing your business. And
they have an absolute right to fire you. If you, I mean, this is why people, like, even not at their job, if they're away from their job and they get caught on camera acting like a complete moron and awful, they risk getting fired because you are representing in a way that company. And so, you know, you have to have your conduct kind of, you know, match what you're supposed to be upholding with your company. Now, I'm starting to think, Stu, there might be a cottage industry, because I remember the other woman who dropped the N-word and then she had a huge GoFundMe.
Yeah.
When the kid stole something from her purse or right, at stole, the playground. It was like three or something. Yeah. Just like took it out, right? Yeah. Whatever that was.
It was a playground.
But they had like millions of dollars in this GoFundMe. I'm just starting to wonder if there's like a business opportunity here. Like, you know, maybe where, you know, you get the consultant thing going.
I like it's this. Like,
hey, like, what's your job? Like, where, like, do you want to go somewhere? And like, you know, you can just like go off on someone when a certain customer comes in, and then we, you know, we get the story for you, and then we just, the GoFundMe comes in.
All right. This could be a profitable idea. All right. Like, if you are like, I'd really like to have a racist rant against somebody, you come to us. We'll put people in the line, like behind them, and they'll have the phone so they can get the best angles. We can get the whole thing covered. Right. You know, we'll post it. Maybe we could start up a website covering these things. We post it. And then right,
another victim of cancelculture.com.
And then we put up the GoFundMe for you. You get hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we take, I don't know, 20%. I mean, this is
40%.
40%.
I mean, that's just,
totally 40%. Reasonable. I mean, then we don't have to work at all. We just start collecting.
Yeah, and you don't have to be like, listen, we're not advocating racism here in any way.
We're
right?
just
like,
profiting off
you don't even have to be a racist. You just have to see an opportunity. Yeah. I mean, this is all. And I don't even want you to do this, but like,
no.
Listen.
No,
if it's going to happen, we may as well
capitalize. It's a capitalist system right there. Let me take you another cancel culture related story, Dan. This is one I kind of don't really remember from the Me Too era. This is Jason Derulo. He's a musical artiste. I'm sure you have obviously all of his albums, most of them signed. I know. Mm-hmm. So you're a huge fan. He apparently had a sexual harassment case against him. I honestly don't know word one about whether it was true or not. He claims it wasn't true, of course, and his accusers say it was. There's a big blow up, and he got at least partially canceled. You know, kind of like not really, you know, the sales go way down. He's not doing the big concerts anymore, not getting all the stuff. So that goes on. And like, but let's take for a moment, take out of that whole perspective whether he's guilty or not. I want to play a clip of him talking about him getting sued and how he's reacted to it since. Watch.
There was a lawsuit not too long ago by an artist that was like hired to your label that was dismissed.
Twice.
What did you learn going through that?
Never work with women.
Oh, come on.
There's truth in every joke. it's a sad truth. Like, I will never be alone in a room with a woman that I work with, like ever again.
What?
It's too risky. That case was dismissed twice in two different states. And there's hardly no mention of it online. When that case was brought up, it was on every single blog, every single front page And I lost so many brand deals, relationships off of a story that was not even slightly believable. She said I sacrificed a goat in a sexual ritual. All people read was the headline, right? And that's all it takes to lose everything. That's a crazy concept. I lost millions of dollars off of an arbitrary story that some woman told. Like a crazy, crazy story that someone had been told. So, with that being said, how can I be comfortable being in a room with a woman that I work with and not feel like she can just say whatever she wants? It's like, it's not worth it to me.
Now, what's interesting about that, Dan, is now, even though his case was thrown out in two separate states, and by all appearances, at least legally, he was not responsible for this, he's now being re-canceled because he's saying he doesn't want to work with women. And I think when you listen to the context of that, it makes a lot more sense. But, I mean, should he be canceled?
I mean, listen, I think there's a lot of common sense into what he's saying here. It very much reminds me of the Billy Graham rule, which is just a lot of people take that, a lot of women take that as like offensive to women. Like, oh, you think that, you know, we can't be trusted in a room and et cetera, et cetera. I actually think it's a sign of respect towards women because you're trying to say, hey, listen, I want to make sure everyone knows that this is this relationship is purely professional, because not only like from assault and that perspective, but just the mere, you know, appearance of impropriety when you're alone in a room with someone of the opposite sex for long periods of time, might be a long meeting, whatever. So I think there's a lot of common sense here. And I think it shouldn't be viewed as a hateful thing. It should be viewed as a respectful thing.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. And also, you can understand a guy who went through that,
right,
especially if he actually is innocent, having to go through that and then ruining his career in a lot of ways. I can understand why he maybe be a little more careful. Dan Andros, managing editor of CBN News. Be sure to check him out on the CBN Quick Start podcast. It's available right now. You can subscribe today. Dan, thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Stu.
We live in a world that constantly asks for more productivity, and somewhere in all of that, most of us forget what it feels like to have a moment that actually belongs to us. Kindred Harvest was created to give some of that space back. It turns a simple cup of tea into a small ritual, something that is going to be able to slow your mind a little bit and let you have a little space to settle into the day. Their blends start with real whole ingredients like leaves and herbs and roots and flowers that you can identify by sight and smell. Just honest ingredients chosen because they taste good and they feel good and they actually come from nature. The bags are made from clean, plant-based materials, so what ends up in your mug is exactly what was meant to be there. Pure flavor, pure aroma, and nothing that you wouldn't want to drink. Everything is blended and packed right here in the U.S. by people who care enough about the craft to get every detail right. Stop trusting China with your family's health. Choose American quality. Choose Kindred Harvest, cultivating goodness daily. Go to kindredharvest.co, kindredharvest.co. Use the code STEW for 20% off. It's kindredharvest.co, and the promo code is STEW. Big news, at least in my world. Good things happening for me, for Stu. What did Stu do right to get this to happen? Yes, we have Jasmine Crockett news, and it's big news. Very big rumors that she is going to run for Senate. And in addition to that, one of the big pieces of evidence pointing this direction is an ex-House Democrat dropping out of the Texas Senate race as Crockett candidacy rumors swirl. This is Colin Allred is the guy. You might remember him, even if you're not from Texas, as he ran for Senate previously and lost. And the deal with Allred is he was just pretty boring, like just kind of a boring candidate. Nothing really there. A normal Democrat, left wing, but not exciting like my girl Jasmine Crockett. So it looks like she's going to be running. And then, of course, we hope she's running in 2028 as well. Do we have the T-shirts? Because that You know, you want Jasmine running for office. You can go to stewdoesmerch.com. Use the code STEW10. You can save 10% off the Jasmine Crockett 28. By the way, to be clear, we want her to run for president, not win. We want her to run for Senate, not win. If she wins, then, you know, the U-Hauls from the state are going to be very expensive leaving Texas. Vanity Fair has also parted ways with Olivia Nuzzi. This is a very strange story. We've talked a lot about it. I have a minor league obsession with the story. Like, it's the worst part of me. But I am sort of obsessed with learning about how terrible this all was. One of the things that I find interesting, outside of the Keith Olbermann thing, which I want to bring up again at some point, but also, you know, the fact that she could have just kept quiet and kept the nice gig at Vanity Fair, instead wrote this book, caused all this flare-up, and probably destroyed her career for at least another few months. All right, we have more tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining us. StuDoesAmerica.com. See you tomorrow.